Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook told me to stop complaining about them posting stuff on Facebook that they were enjoying because, well, they were enjoying it. It doesn't have to be right or accurate. It doesn't have to be the truth. They were just having fun, and you shouldn't be doing that because that's not what Facebook is for us, so don't do it. On top of everything else, one of the things that we try to do is try to go answering the questions of why with the old adage of sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I am known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. I was born into a Roman Catholic household in Brooklyn, New York. I was raised on Long Island. I now live outside of Buffalo, New York, and I'm an unabashed atheist. On the round table tonight is Joe.
Oh, my turn. Good evening, folks. Name's Joseph. Born as a Roman Catholic in Chicago, Illinois. Served 8 years in the military, and currently living as a graphic designer in Pittsburgh as an atheist and fervent gun owner.
Also, unrenowned tech.
Sorry, I don't want to choke on my nuts there.
Wow, that's a loaded statement.
I live in Maryland, grew up in New York. I was born and raised Jewish. Became a born again for a while. Studied a couple different religions and just realized, for science.
And, of course, rounding out the group, Dallin.
Good evening, folks. I go by the online name of Dallin, born in Canada, raised in a Lutheran household where religion was not exactly taken very seriously, more out of a sense of community rather than a sense of devotion. My parents always told me, keep an open mind, never stop asking questions, and always jump at the opportunity to learn. This has led me on several journeys of enlightenment, skepticism, and I was fairly comfortable living my life as a borderline agnostic / religious individual until I started watching how fundamentalists were taking a religion that I grew up with and began twisting it into something completely opposite of what I was raised to believe. This made me question everything, and I have now thrown in with the non-believers in an attempt to get our country, well, basically to get our civilization back as a whole from people who seem completely determined to destroy it.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. It is August 17th, 2014. This is episode number 29, With a Bullet, and we are going to be discussing the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. This is going to be
arms or arm bears.
We're going to be discussing a lot of pieces about it, and we know full well that there are going to be a lot of questions, a lot of polarizing ideas.
Is that polar bears that get armed?
I'm sorry, but I'm having a great time because this is probably the first episode on here where I've got lots to contribute.
It'll be fun.
And anyway, I have a lot of puns.
That's good. Now, we know full well that going into this, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to look at this, whether live or later, who are going to have a lot of different opinions on their own. Some are very, very sincerely held. Some are very firm in whatever it is that they believe in. However, we'd like to remind you, the purpose of this vlogcast is to really delve into the questions of why, somewhere between where the question begins and where the answer ends. All of that gray section is where we delve into. So we're not necessarily going to be ending up with a, yes, you should have guns, no, you should not have guns, you should, but in this case, well, you shouldn't in those cases. We're not going to be going there. We're going to be discussing what the amendment is, why it is, and what we think it's all about. Now, it's entirely possible we are not all going to agree on any one particular idea of how it's supposed to be.
Probably but not, but that's the point of life, is that we don't agree on everything.
Exactly.
The whole point of civilization is taking people who don't agree and getting them to coexist without, you know, ripping each other's throats out.
Exactly. But the ripping and throat part is the fun part. I disagree with you, Joe.
It's not.
But the point of it is, we're going to go ahead and we're going to discuss stuff that you may not necessarily like the way that we talk it through, and that's okay. Please remember, we are not lawyers. We, however, are, for the most part, lay people on a lot of this stuff, and we will likely discuss it in those terms. We may make mistakes. We may be wrong. But bottom line, we're going to talk through how we see it and work it from there.
Are we allowed to plug product placement on here?
No.
Darn.
So what? Plug products?
Exactly.
I mean, I can't tell everybody about my new habit?
No.
The lightning.
We have to...
Call me.
We have to... We would be exceedingly remiss. I would be exceedingly remiss if I didn't make reference to last week's opening, where I discussed the internal pain that people feel. We have discussed grief and many different pieces associated with it on previous episodes. In between last week's and this week's, we lost, unfortunately, one of the most brilliant comics of our time, Robin Williams. It would be wrong for us not to at least make reference to it, because the opening that I had last week about emotional pain was not prophetic, but it was unfortunate and very coincidentally timed. We, of course, had no idea what was going to happen just a few days later.
Could I chime in on this? In serious manner.
So, on behalf of all of us who are on the panels, our deepest sorrows and respects go to Robin Williams' family and our hopes for peace for all of you in the coming months ahead. Jack, go ahead.
As somebody who has suffered from chronic depression, walking up to somebody who you find out is depressed and telling them to get over it or to just look on the bright side of life does not work. It, in some cases, makes the depression worse, because now, whether you wanted them to or not, a part of them is going, there's something wrong with me, I shouldn't be feeling this way, and I'm a bad person, or I'm not normal, and instead of addressing it under those thoughts, they beat themselves down even more. If you find somebody who is depressed, whether they are your family or your friends, the best thing you can do is walk up, say, hey, I'm here for you, if you ever want to talk, I will listen. And do that, because sometimes they just want somebody to sit next to them for 5 minutes and not say a word.
This is true. I mean, Joel vouch for this one. What happened every morning for the couple of days after I took the time out to make sure that I sent you a text message every morning for a couple of days to make sure that you were there.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. It really doesn't. And it makes a world of difference. With that out of the way, if you would like to chime in, if you're watching live, and I do show that there is one person watching live, of course, thank you. You can take advantage of the question and answer system that is on the Hangout page. We've got that always running, so you can go ahead and ask questions. If you'd instead like to send in a text message or a voicemail, please take advantage of the voicemail system. The phone number on that is area code 959-HCTV for Holy Crap, the Vlogcast, 554. Now, the only way that I can really start off the show to really go through the discussion is to read the Second Amendment itself, the text of it, which is, we don't really need to go through the entirety.
There aren't very many words, just very specific ones.
Yes. Yes, and that's where it starts to get a little bit crazy also, and that's one of the things that really pissed me off, because this is something I did not know. Going from the Wikipedia entry, which, you'll forgive me, I understand that Wikipedia cannot always be trusted. However, Wikipedia can be a wonderful tool. Depending as to who's using it, it can also be a tool. So, take it with a grain of salt. There are apparently two different versions. The first of which, according to this, as passed by the Congress and preserved in the National Archives, states the following, and I quote, "A well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed, period." There's a reason why I'm doing it this way, and I'll explain in a moment. The second version, as ratified by the states and authenticated by Thomas Jefferson, then the Secretary of State. It reads as follows, I quote, "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, period." This is a problem right from the get-go, because the minutia of legislation is a pain in the ass, because you start to get into what does is mean.
Bill Clinton did that one, didn't he?
Well, exactly. Anybody that followed the Bill Clinton trial would definitely agree with you on that one, Shuja.
Exactly. And the sad part of it is, once you get over the atrocity of language, you have to really deconstruct it all and realize, holy crap, there actually is an argument to be said here. So, keeping the idea that we have two somewhat different takes on what the legislation is supposed to be, I want to open it up to you first, Dallin, because you are Canadian, you see how things are from the outside, so you've got a much different perspective from your own government's way that things have been done versus what you see happening on our side of the border.
Well, our own Charter of Rights and Freedoms up here also ensures that we also have the right to keep and bear arms. However, there's as far as I can tell from looking on a few sites, there's nothing to do with a well-regulated militia involved. Now, speaking as an outsider from a perspective of somebody who is not in your country except to visit, I'm of two minds on it. The right to bear arms, okay. The right to own a weapon, I don't have a problem with. I mean, there's definitely a need for self-defense in some places. I can't recall any time where at least in recent years, where a militia was actually going to even take a shot at taking out the government, at least not seriously. I have no corroborating reference for that. But what I don't understand is the extreme that some people feel they have to go through. Like, to be honest, you're living in an urban setting, you're living in a city, do you really need, like, even though it is your right, must you possess a belt-fed machine gun?
If you're in New York City and going into the sewers, you need two of them.
Okay, my question is, though, when is Joe Sixpack going to go down into the sewers unless he or she is a city worker? I said Sixpack, not Murray.
I don't even have a Sixpack. I got a 12-pack.
Good on you. My point, though, like, my dad, in his closet, because back then we didn't have to worry about gun cabinets, had in his possession a 22 long rifle, a 30-06, a 303, and a 12-gauge shotgun. My dad was a hunter. No. My dad was a hunter, though, back in the day. He used those guns to get food. You know, I didn't find out a lot about this until after he died, because that's when the so-called war stories came out. And again, war stories, another story entirely. But, yeah, he would go shoot moose, shoot deer, because that's how my family was fed. The guns serve the purpose of being how you get food. That's the woods was the supermarket, pretty much.
Did you shoot the donuts, too?
Sorry?
Did you shoot the donuts, too?
Well, maybe there's a reason the donuts have holes in them. I don't know. My point is, though, is that up here, in many of the very isolated areas, guns do serve a purpose. Hunting, you know, for food. But seeing down there, like, I'm seeing news articles now of people walking around with, like, AR-15 strapped to their back because it's their right. To me, that is not enough of a justification for carrying around a piece of military hardware that is designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to kill.
Like, now there's a lot of piece about that, and that's definitely one item that we're going to touch on, because just like with so many other things, there's a time and a place. And you're right. That's something that's been cropping up. That is in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not a time and a place.
We'll address all of those as we come to them. We're not going to address everything in one go because, you know.
Yeah, we've only got theoretically 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours. I don't want to do a 2-hour show. I want to try to keep it to 90, but okay. We'll come back to that. By the way, there was a question on the board that has disappeared.
Yeah, I was about to. Does that mean it's a double standard?
Yeah, I believe it was Nash that put that one up.
Yeah.
I didn't get to address it right away, and that does not mean that we did not do anything with it. It does not mean that we were going to let it go. It just meant that we were not going to be hitting it just yet. As a matter of fact, I was going to specifically say that, you know, we've got the question and we'll get to it in a little bit. Tech, I'm going to throw it over to you for a couple of seconds. I'm not even sure where to begin. Let's get your opening ideas to how you have felt about it and kind of get everybody else, and we'll kind of dive through the rest of it all from there.
I don't own a gun. Unless you count.
All right, Nerf. Moving on from there. That's easy. Okay, moving on.
I don't own a gun unless you count Nerf. I own a bow and arrows. I own a very large collection of knives. I own swords, wooden and metal. I even own a bamboo bow staff, or bamboo staff. The person who comes into my house who threatens me is going to be lucky to leave alive. That's assuming that all their limbs are attached. However, just because I choose not to use a gun doesn't mean that I feel that nobody else should be allowed to own a gun, nor know how to use it, nor be ready to use it. I choose a different method because that is what I prefer. Our Constitution allows that. I do believe that a background check to verify that the person that you're selling to is not a convicted criminal is fine with me, because if I went to buy a gun, that would not bother me. Therefore, I have no problem with that. I understand the concept of a cooling off period where, and you know, just so that a spouse who's angry at their other spouse doesn't have the ability to go out, immediately get the gun, go home and shoot somebody. You give them, you know, they have that cooling off period set up. I understand why some places do that. But it's not something I would require of anybody. I think the background check, as long as it's as long as they could find a way to implement it so that it would be it would be a unified system that would work from state to state to state without error, I think that's what they need to focus on rather than debating about what kinds of guns can and cannot be sold. Do I think some guy should go down the street with a Tommy gun? Have some class, would you please? You know, go down with a 1911. That really says something.
Okay, actually, if you're going to go downtown with a Tommy gun, there is a way to do it.
Especially on Valentine's Day.
I'm saying good suit, fedora, and make sure you got the drum clip because you're rocking the 1920s, man.
And don't forget to have your spats clean, too.
There you go.
You need the violin case or whatever case it needs.
Don't start with me. I actually have one.
Yes, I have seen that picture. Anyway, there was a reason they called those things typewriters back in the day.
Anyway, the point is that I don't think in today's day and age, here in the United States of America, there's any reason for anybody to be walking around with a machine gun strapped to your back. Whether or not you own one, hey, if you clear the background checks, everything shows up fine. But walking around with it into Walmart, come on, how much is that discount worth to you?
Yeah, again, we are going to specifically hit on that in a couple of moments. Actually, as a matter of fact, I think we're going to make that the first thing up.
When I see a bunch of people carrying a gun on their hip in a holster, that doesn't bother me. It just doesn't.
Okay. Joe, I'm going to throw it over to you at this point, of course. Yeah. And kind of remember, where we're going at this point is kind of the overview first, and then we'll kind of delve into it.
We're looking at the words themselves and how we feel about them.
How we felt about the entirety overall, not necessarily into the letter of the law just yet, but just the overall feeling, the
Okay. Well, I will wait then as far as the letter-to-letter goes.
Yeah.
Because I do have a comment on that. However, I am going to disagree with both Tech and Alan on this one.
Okay.
Because in my opinion, the First Amendment has nothing to, or the Second Amendment, sorry, has nothing to do with whether or not you have a gun to defend yourself against your neighbor. The rights guaranteed by the Second Amendment, for better or for worse, and I am saying this on, you know, the internet, on what is essentially public broadcast, and it's protected under the First Amendment's free speech. The point of the Second Amendment is the possible necessary violent overthrow of the American government. And while that may sound fucking crazy to some, look at where it started. And we will talk about that once we get into the wording.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely and exactly right.
So okay. Should somebody have the right to own, not necessarily carry around down Main Street, but should he have the right to own military-grade hardware? I believe so.
Sorry, running low on battery life.
Nope. Understood. Okay. Now, as we know full well, as Joe went ahead and announced this for everybody and let us all know about it, Joe has spent time in the military. So he has, of course, a slightly different perspective than most other folks, the vast majority of people. I have had a number of people in the military and paramilitary in my family. One of my brothers is a police officer. My father was a beat cop for 30-plus years. One of my other brothers is in the armed forces. I've said it before, so it's not a big deal. In the Air Force. He used to fly A-10s, which, funny enough, were actually, some of them were built like a town or two away from where we used to live on Long Island. So, yay Grumman, Northrop, and the flying freaking titanium bathtubs.
I do have a message from our would-be fifth guest. Internet bad, screw everything tonight.
Okay.
Internet's so, being mean.
What, Bunny?
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, Witchy, if you're watching, you know, screw you too, thanks. So the way that I've seen it over the years and the way that I've thought about it has really gone through a lot of flops back and forth, trying to figure out how I should think about it. And my idea on it has been very close to what Joe has just referenced to, that the guarantee for personal weaponry, firearms, the idea of it was to guarantee that should the time arise, the individual states, which were at the time originally the colonies, would have the ability for their own militias, which we would think of in terms of the state's national guards, for instance, would be able to, if necessary, take on the problem of a corrupted government that was otherwise usurping the power of the people. That's the way that I've thought of it. I'm sorry, Tech?
So why are they waiting?
Well, and therein gets to be one of the funny problems.
Yeah.
Because the way that things have played out over the decades and over the 200 plus years for the United States existence, it has become less and less, and we've talked about this before, it has become less and less these United States of America to becoming the United States of America, where the lines of the states have become blurred into the whole, mm-hmm. as opposed to each of the individual states themselves being somewhat self-sustaining and individualized pieces that contributed to the whole. Joe?
To sum it all up, there was a very good reason why there was a strong fear of a overly powerful centralized government when we started this whole thing.
Yep, and that's got everything to do with why the Revolutionary War happened anyway. Now, go ahead.
Well, there is one thing, and we'll address it later, but I would have to disagree with you on how you described your feelings toward the whole militia thing. But we will discuss that when we get into the actual wording.
Right, yes, because there is a piece of that I've specifically left out. But again, we come to that in a little bit. All right, now, we need to go ahead and we need to address the AR-15 on the back in the room because it's way too prevalent right now, and it's a big old pain in the ass. Tex, I'm gonna throw it your way first.
All right. I understand that there is concern for the need for government overthrow. I've seen what a lot of these people in office do, what they do in the name. Specifically, many of them do it in the name of a religion that I don't believe in. And that bothers me a lot.
It's funny how all these things tie in.
Exactly. But I still do not desire to own a gun. If something happens, if there is a point in life where the government does really try to repress people to the point of where, no, you can't own a gun. No, you can't own a knife. No, you have to wear the clothes that we tell you to. No, you can't eat that. No, you can't drink that. You must eat this. You must drink that.
And Big Brother is watching you.
Yeah, if it gets to that point, there's going to be something's going to happen. There always is. In history, there always has been. Even with technology, as far advanced as it is now, there will be dissent, resistance, people, resistance, and all that other crap. Will I be a part of it? I have no idea. I think we've been staving it off and pushing it back and pushing it back. It may eventually happen. It may not. We may avoid it. I'm not one of those people who are going to stash up on several weapons and ammunition and whatnot and get ready for something like that, just in case. I will get ready for a flood. I will get ready for a hurricane. government stuff, government issue, government problems, things like that, I'm not the fighter that people are going to be looking for on their front lawns or on the front lines. I'm the thinker in the background thinking about the building design and figuring out how to get those guys inside. I probably shouldn't be advertising that.
It's okay. I'll make sure that the next time we play Left 4 Dead that I'm not gonna get in front of you. How's that?
Well, Joe, I'm a thinker. I'm not the fighter. I am the thinker, though.
That's yes. Okay.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. So, like I was mentioning, and actually, Tech, I'm gonna bring it back for you on this one to kind of narrow down a little bit more on this one. The people who have been pissing people off left, right, and center who think it's perfectly okay to be, and I'm using the terminology specifically this time, flaunting their hardware because they think that they should, because they want to make a statement in restaurants and such. Go for it. Because I think I know where you're going to go.
The ones who open and carry to carry the pistol on their hip, that doesn't bother me in the least. I mean, they have a pistol, they're carrying it, in the way the law tells them to, that hopefully makes it so that it doesn't go off accidentally, you know, like loaded and cocked and all that crap.
Oh, yeah.
The ones who decide to carry the one that takes like two people to set up on their back, you know, shopping cart. I'm sorry that if your penis is that small, but
am I the only one that's having problems with his audio?
No, I'm having trouble hearing him too.
Yeah, Tech, the microphone is a little. Unfortunately, it might be. And see, the problem of it is, and folks, so that you understand this too, we're a little bit at the mercy of the technology, which unfortunately for Google Hangouts does have a noise gate limiter. So if we don't have enough volume, it doesn't necessarily trip through properly to try and prevent us from having feedback, echo, background noise. So if things happen like this, please forgive us. We're kind of working.
So where do you lose me?
The last pieces of what you were just saying, somebody who wants to put something over a two-person on his back.
To the people who wear a piece of weaponry that requires, like, two people to set up, okay, guess what? Take that back home and keep it there. Not because you shouldn't be touting it around, but think about it. If you're really worried about a government who's going to oppress you, do you really want to advertise that you should be one of the people targeted by the government first so that you don't get a chance to back up your fellow man?
That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. Joe?
That's exactly why I only have 6 of the guns and not all 40 lined up on the wall. But, yes, here's how I see it. Should you be allowed to own practically whatever firearm you want? Really? If you want my opinion on the letter of the law and what it means to me, yes. Should you be allowed to carry that everywhere? No, that is fucking retarded. Here's the problem that we run into a lot with carry, whether it's concealed carry, whether it's open carry, whatever. One, people just don't – the people who are carrying just do not understand – common sense. There's a reason for carrying, yes. And, you know, that does not mean that you need to carry a friggin' Modus machine gun into the supermarket. No, that is stupid, okay? This is coming from a gun owner and a veteran. That is stupid. Mm-hmm. Now, the second part of what I'm going to address on this is on the other side, the people who see the folks who are carrying. The problem with a lot of people and their view of guns is that most of their exposure to firearms is from one of two things. Movies or television. Well, video games, yes, but primarily speaking, movies, television. In movies and television, there are usually two kinds of people that have guns. Those who are in a uniform or have a badge, and then everybody else. And everybody else that doesn't have a uniform or a badge is generally a bad guy in movies and television. And that's how people look at this when they see somebody with a gun on his hip dressed as, you know, average Joe. And that's a problem that, you know, it's no offense, but it's immature because you're basing your experience for real life on fiction.
And that's just a recipe for disaster, no matter how you play it. Dallin? Tech?
I was going to bounce off that. There were days back in the Wild Wild West where people who owned handguns, the pistols, they didn't always wear their pistol out and about because that could draw a lot of attention, and sometimes it's the kind of attention that they definitely didn't want. They had the pistols for their own safety, depending on where they were, what they were protecting against. When they wanted to make sure that people understood that they were prepared to protect what they had, that's when they would go out wearing the things. Or if they had to go out and protect, then they would do it too. But they didn't always walk around with a pistol strapped to their hip.
Fair enough. Okay. Dal?
Okay, based on listening to those two, I again, in light of new evidence, I'm willing to change my stance a little bit because now I know more. Okay, bearing arms, yes. What Joe said about common sense, I completely agree with. Now, maybe you guys can educate me on this one. Again, coming from north of the border that I am. So, Joe.
Yes.
I know you have a conceal and carry license.
I do.
I know. And you've actually informed us of once where you're brandishing a firearm, or rather opening your coat, possibly prevented you from getting mugged at one point a few years back, as I recall.
No, there was no opening my coat. I put the gun right to the perpetrator's face.
Okay, fair enough. That being said, so we have people that can have open carry, conceal and carry, like you said. Now, and in our Q&A section here, Chris Sampson just brought up a huge, awesome comment from Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. Now, I have a friend and a niece, well, a friend who is, and a niece who is training to become a police officer. And one thing I have learned is that when a cop draws their gun, they have made the conscious and purposeful decision that they are willing to end a life. Now, let's get past the trauma of that on the person who's about to do the shooting. But because you have the right to carry you are legally allowed to carry a firearm in public. If you shoot somebody, you are still liable for criminal charges, are you not?
Depends on the situation.
Okay.
For instance, if I see somebody running away from, you know, breaking into somebody's car,
mm-hmm.
Do I get to shoot them? No.
Okay.
The idea of the conceal and carry permit, and this is something that you have to, this is a part of the test that you have to go through. It, conceal and carry permit, just like a driver's license, you have to demonstrate that you know what you're doing with a gun, both physically, you have to go to a class, and then mm-hmm. you have to take a written test to demonstrate that you have the knowledge of what laws you are to abide and what scenario, what you are expected to do in a given scenario. The only time that you should pull out your firearm as somebody who carries, whether it's concealed or not, the only time you should ever pull out your firearm is when there is a clear and present danger to your physical well-being or that of someone else. For example, the mugger who tried to take me and one of my friends. They had a knife. What else they had, I don't know. They might have had a gun in their jacket. But what I saw at that point in time, they had a knife. They were grabbing the person I was with. That is a clear and present physical danger to my friend's life. At which point, I made the decision to draw my weapon, put it to his face, and get him to let go.
Now, before we go farther, there's a piece of this that I want to make sure that that I get in here because it's an important one. In New York State, there is a thing about, oh crap, I forget exactly what it's called, but basically for arguing self-defense. Mm-hmm. In New York State, as I recall it, and again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm trying to remember a lot of pieces from a long time back. As I understand it, as I remember it, you are supposed to use the minimum force necessary. Now, I do believe that that is actually codified.
Yes.
In very specific terms like that.
For example, this is an M1911 A3 government issue pistol. It holds, generally speaking, 7 or 8, depending on the magazine, rounds of 45 caliber ACP.
That'll make a big hole in somebody.
Yes, it will. If somebody is presenting a danger to myself or to somebody, you know, reasonably presenting a danger, and I shoot them, if they are disabled by that shot, I would hopefully not kill them. I do not want to kill them.
Right.
If I get the chance to, I will shoot them in the leg. If they are disabled by that shot and no longer presenting a danger, any shot I take after that, I am held liable for.
Exactly right.
Because that is manslaughter.
Right. Okay. Now, this is something that it may not seem like it actually makes sense, but follow me a second. When I was teaching Tiny Tribble, the rules about fighting as a kid, the rules about fighting, rule number one, don't. Rule number two, if you have to, you fight to win. Rule number three, you fight in a neutral location. You don't have somebody else pick the location. Item number four, if you put somebody down, leave them there unless they get back up at you again and you put them back down again.
When the fight is over, it's over.
Exactly right. If somebody is down, you don't kick them when they're down. You leave them there. And that's a really important part of it all.
Yeah.
I know I probably derailed you a little bit, Dallin. I'm sorry, but...
That's okay. I understand. But actually, I wanted to get back to Chris's statement and question here because he or she presents an interesting question at the very end of it.
Sure.
Okay, the right to bear arms gives American citizens great power. Would you agree that the responsibility may need to be enforced? Now, I have a basic understanding of state versus federal politics and governance thereof.
Right.
Actually, I think a lot of I was actually thinking about this earlier today. Reminds me a lot of ancient Greece, where each state is its own autonomous component.
Yeah.
But then eventually they were unified under one nation. You know, I don't know if the movie was even historically close or what, but my point is, I agree with that. I think responsibility, i.e. education, like, so somebody can go into a Walmart, pick up a gun, you know, or they can go get their FAC. I think it's is that what it's called down there?
Let me get back to you on that.
Okay, but you know what I mean.
It depends on what you're actually asking, because the federal firearm license, FFL, that I think you're referencing is referencing to being able to sell firearms or to possess certain degrees of firearms. There are different degrees of firearms.
Okay, I'm talking about the ability to purchase a firearm, to own a firearm.
You don't actually need any kind of license.
Okay.
Currently.
See, up here we
do. Purchase a firearm. Now, that differs, you know, state to state. And do I think you should? Do I think you ought to? Yeah, but we'll get to that in a minute.
But okay. So what I'm thinking is that when it comes to issues like firearms, I think that has to be a lot more of a homogenous type of law, i.e., federal, than to vary from state to state, because just because I can't go pick up a firearm, say, in Pittsburgh, I can go one state over, or sorry, in the state of Pennsylvania, I can go one state over and pick it up.
Well,
and then bring it back.
Not quite. You see, that's what the background check is about. If for some reason they found that – now, when you go to pick up a firearm, regardless of what it is, hell, 22 caliber rifle, a little varmint rifle that I picked up just a little bit ago, I still had to get a background check for.
Well, yeah.
And that background check goes to the federal level.
Yeah.
And in order to get that gun, you know, I have to do the background check.
Mm-hmm.
And wait as they punch in the numbers, send my information, and then it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually takes anywhere from half an hour to, you know, depending on how long the connections and such are, up to, you know, an hour, hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a long time to be waiting in front of cameras at the countertop of a gun store or Walmart.
Yeah.
Somebody who's trying to get one illegally, that's going to make them real nervous. Hell.
That's why they got guns in Virginia.
But, you know, anything that's on their record will come back on that background check,
mm-hmm.
which means if they fail you on the background check buying it in Pennsylvania, it doesn't matter if you go over to Ohio and try to buy one, because you're still not going to be able to do it.
Okay. To answer your question, Chris, do I agree that responsibility may need to be enforced? I agree wholeheartedly, and I think it needs to be taken a lot more seriously than it is nowadays. Like, I cannot remember the country. I want to say Switzerland. I could be wrong. But some country over the pond, there's mandatory military service. I think Norway also has this. And they, I can't remember if firearms are required ownership after, like, post-military?
Not quite. I believe what you're referencing is Switzerland, or it might be Austria. It's one of the two. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly which.
That's fine.
But after having been invaded twice in the course of 40 years, they decided, this shit ain't happening again.
Yeah.
And they made, you know, conscription. They made mandatory service of at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when you left the military, you kept the weapons you trained on.
That's what I was remembering.
What you did with that weapon afterward, you could give it to your family, you could sell it, whatever. But when you left the military, you brought that. That would be like, say I was in the military for 8 years, and the standard issue for the time, and that's something that that you see in that country as well. You'll see generations of family members who had served in the military with generations of standard issue weapons in their closet.
Yeah,
it would be very much as if, you know, I had served in the military for 8 years in the United States, where the standard service rifle is the M16, and they would have given me my M16 to keep after getting out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but my point is that you've worked with that gun, you understand that gun, you know what the gun is used for, you respect the gun.
Yes.
And I think what we see a lot of in the U.S. is, yes, I can own a gun, but do I truly respect the weapon for what it's capable of doing? And I think that disconnect is what is causing a lot of what we see these days. And I really think that kind of responsibility, the some kind of training, some kind of course, some kind of way to, you know, give people's head a shake and say, hey, look, just because it's your right to own this, to bear this, you still got to understand what it is you're doing.
Absolutely.
I was just want to say, Chris Fempaz has also been hitting the Q&A here. They're in agreement about carrying the firearms. I think that's referring back to what Tech was talking about, the people who are really doing it wrong. And they also just confirmed that Austria and Switzerland have that that practice talked about.
First World War, Austria was kind of a belligerent in that, but you know, Second World War, they both got stomped all over.
Yeah. Well, Switzerland was technically neutral in World War II because it's landlocked. However, so was Sweden. Sweden was also technically neutral because it didn't have access to too much open water, But I'll tell you this right now, and this came from my dad, who was Norwegian Underground Resistance. Sweden was supplying arms to the Norwegian Underground to keep them going.
Nice.
So neutral? Maybe not so much.
You had something you wanted to hit us with.
I was going to say, one, on the whole, so Dallin can understand, there are what are called gun shows.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually buy guns at gun shows.
Yes.
Now, depending on some of them, like the ones in Virginia,
yeah.
If you go with you, you want to buy a gun, they the laws are set up in Virginia, certain areas of Virginia. All the vendor has to ask you is, are you a legal resident of Virginia? And all your response has to be, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. You don't even have to show them your license to prove it, and they can sell you a gun.
Now, that is and a loophole.
That is what's wrong.
Hold it. Tech, the sound quality is coming down again.
Okay.
Because, and I want to stop here because of that, we were kind of going over to you. So I want to make sure that you get your chance here.
And the other part is that they have to ask if you've ever been convicted of a crime, and your answer is no, and you're set. So there have been many people trying to get that law changed that if you're going to buy a gun at a show like that, they have to submit a background check. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and so am I. Here's the thing with the background with the gun shows. There's a difference between going to a gun show and going to a gun shop. Gun shows are kind of like a convention. You're not going into a store where there's a bunch of guns and, you know, a guy who does his business buying and selling firearms. You're going to a gun show where the vendors are private citizens who are not, you know, they do not make their living selling guns. If I were to sell a gun to somebody, it is within my right to do so. The only stipulation is that I cannot sell a gun to someone if there is any reason to believe that they are a convicted felon or that they will use this gun to harm someone else. If there is no reasonable reason to believe that either of those is the case, then it is legal for me to sell that gun to that person, depending on the state. There are some states, for example, Pennsylvania, where I have to go to an FFL and file a transfer. And then my name gets put on the transfer. My history with the firearm gets put on there. Their name gets put on there. They file a background check as well. And that all gets taken care of. Yes, I will agree. Gun shows need to be tightened up a bit if we're going to, because we're not going to be splitting hairs. But here's the thing. Looking at the problem that we're facing as far as, you know, gun control is concerned, gun shows have been infinitesimal on the impact of that. People do not go to gun shows to buy guns to go, you know, rob a liquor store.
Yeah.
No, in a lot of cases they go because there is somebody who has a vintage, and I'm going to use the term weapon, a vintage weapon that they may be a collector. They may be looking to put together a set, or maybe that particular type has got a particular sentimental value for whatever reason.
For example,
that's a whole other thing.
For example, I own some 40 firearms, give or take. When you own as many as I do, you know, exact numbers, not so great. However, the majority of those firearms are not what you would call current military-grade firearms. Are they military? Yes. But, for example, I own a Mosin Nagant, which is a bolt-action service rifle that served with the Russian Federation and Soviet Union. It is the longest-serving service rifle in history. I own a M1 carbine that was manufactured by the Inland Division General Motors, December 1941. It saw action in Normandy, it saw action in the Pacific, and it saw action in Korea. That's why I have that one. The oldest firearm I own is an 1887 Harrington Richardson Break Top 32 revolver.
Holy Jesus.
Wow.
It is a beauty.
Did you just say what I thought you said?
Yes. 1887.
No, not you, Surgeon.
Wait, what did I say?
You said holy Jesus.
You know what? You put your hands up in front of your face to block the bullet. What happens, happens. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fine.
In other words, Joe, for the short version, you own many of your firearms for their historical connections to the human race.
And that's...
In that context, I can understand that. Like a collector, sure,
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of situations where people end up purchasing and collecting items that have some kind of historical value.
Now, this is where
cars, in particular, are. I mean, almost analogous. The only difference is, with a car, with an automobile, it is a known quantity. If somebody is going to be trying to kill you with it, you will easily see it coming. Probably now, hear it coming, smell it coming, too.
This is where I'm going to piss off a lot of collectors, though, because I'm the Jay Leno type of collector. I own these firearms. Doesn't mean I'm going to have them sitting pretty on a shelf. For example, my M1 carbine. I have taken it to the range.
Good.
And there are people that will, you know, go, what are you doing? You're destroying the... No. No. Not at all.
Well, don't forget.
I am actually looking at, as a military service member, a veteran, I am looking at the characteristics of this rifle, not just as I look at it, but also firing it and mentally putting myself in the shoes of the gentleman who held this rifle 50, 60, 70 years ago, and see what he had to deal with, what he had to put up with, as far as, okay, is this gun inaccurate? Is this gun low powered? Is this gun yada 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 yada?
What is this person
putting the clip in?
Hmm? What?
Did you pinch your thumb putting the clip in?
No.
Yes, you're using
the only firearm I have that has ever given me any trouble with loading. As far as my physical loading the magazine, is my SKS, because which is a Siminoff carbine. It's the precursor to the AK-47. It was used. It used the same cartridge. It was used, you know, between the end of World War One or World War Two and the adoption of the actual AK-47. It's a semi-automatic rifle. Very, very accurate, very powerful, very good recoil management, but the problem is that it's a fixed magazine, which means that, you know, you don't pop the mag and, you know, put another one in. It's like a Garand, M1 Garand. That's a fixed magazine. It's got multiple rounds in it, but you cannot you do not put all those rounds in at once. You feed them individually or from a clip. That's the difference between a clip, which has a string of bullets on it, and a magazine, which is a box that contains bullets.
There you go. So everybody who's been watching, of course, thank you very much for your time. We're still going, and of course, we're looking at approximately another half hour. May go a little bit beyond that. You're watching Holy Crap, the vlogcast. If you'd like to chime in, if you're watching live, please, by all means, take advantage of the question and answer system here on the Google Hangout page. Be more than happy to answer comments and questions that you might have. We're talking through the ideas and the questions of what the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is, commonly referred to as the right to bear arms, because it's been a contentious problem child basically since the word go. And we're still talking through this. We are about an hour in, and I want to get specifically to the minutiae of the legislation itself, the actual written words, because this is one of the things that has been the biggest problem child for the whole thing. Now, as I started off by saying, there are two slightly different versions, and you'll forgive me if I get pedantic about the English to it, because in legalese, it matters where a comma is, because it changes the meaning of a word, believe it or not. And it's a pain in the ass. Yeah, Tech.
It can also be any number. That payout can be in millions or tens of millions.
That's why it had to be changed for the ratification. The pass by Congress only means it was passed by Congress. It had to be ratified by all the states as well. And that's why that change had to take place.
Yeah, and that's where it gets to be a big old pain in the ass, and I'll show you why. The version that's passed by Congress, and I'm going to take the very first part of it. Granted, it's short, but taking the first part of it. A well-regulated militia, capital M militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, capital S state, comma. I'm going to stop here. The way that this reads, a well-regulated militia, pause, explanation of the last term being necessary to the security of a free state. As this is written, as I've understood it, this is supposed to be meaning that a well-regulated militia is the first part, of course, because it's right there before the first comma. So this is the subject of the entirety. And I know I'm getting pedantic, and my descriptions of English are not always perfect, so bear with me. Being necessary to the security of a free state, describing what the militia is supposed to be, giving a description for how it's supposed to operate. Now, we're going to take the second one, the state ratified version, which states,
which is the version that's in there right now.
Right. A well-regulated militia, lowercase m, militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, lowercase s, comma. Now, we've got them both in the same way, both in the same places. This one is saying, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. This one, to me, is describing that a free state... Shoot. Okay, now this is... I've tried to go through this a couple of times during the week when I announced the topic, and I still have a hard time talking it through. Because it's the same words, but the meanings are...
Well, that's why they changed it.
Differently. Yes. That's
why they changed it, if you would like me to address it.
Sure.
Okay. They changed the capital M and the comma. They were confusing to the people. Now, the Congress passed it. Then the states had to pass it. The general public had to pass it. And they were confused by this because their idea was that, oh, you're allowing just the militia to have firearms. You're saying that this is to enforce a militia. No. That is why they changed it. The right – let me read this. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Yes, you need a military to secure your – to act in defense of the nation – comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is the people in contrast to the militia. The right, they made it so that the right to bear arms was something that the people had that the militia could never take away. Why is it this way? Because the people who wrote this had just fought for 2 years against a tyrannical state militia. That would be the Redcoats. To say that this is to enforce militias defeats the purpose, because look at today. Does each state have a militia? Yes, they have their National Guard. Who does that National Guard ultimately answer to? The federal government.
Okay, now see, this is...
The federal government has the ability to mobilize. The federal government acts as the end-all be-all. Now, if they're not currently being used by the federal government, they are at the command of the governor. And the governor can deploy them for, you know, emergency relief of some sort, or to act as security to escort children to school, as we have seen in the past.
Yes.
But in the event of a government, a federal issue, the federal government takes control of the militias. That is why you see, you know, the Ohio National Guard, you know, 5th Battalion, whatever, getting deployed to Afghanistan. Which, you know, there are National Guard units that have been deployed throughout this entire endeavor of the last, you know, 12 years.
Plus, on top of that, we had LBJ getting the National Guard to go down there and tell the stupid governor, integration is going to happen whether you like it or not, and get out of the way.
Okay. That is why the militia part is in contrast to the people. The people have the right to bear arms, because if that militia that answers to the government ever runs amok, the people need need the means to defend themselves against that, which is another reason why I think, should you be allowed to carry them wherever you want? No, but you should be allowed to have military-grade hardware if you have the sound mind to keep it. Not use it, keep it, so that if ever that happens, you have the means to effect a resistance.
Okay.
Am I saying that I want that to happen? No. I hope to God it never happens. I hope, you know, I have...
Rephrasing. We hope that it never has to happen.
That's the thing. I have what is essentially a military-grade weapon here. This is an AR-15. The only difference between this and the M16 service rifle that I used during my military term is that this does not have the burst function. This does not have a little function that fires 3 rounds all on one pull of the trigger.
Okay.
This fires Dallin, semi-automatic.
Okay. Dallin, I want to bring over to you for a second because the National Guards here on our side of the border, like I was mentioning, Lyndon Baines Johnson, president in the 50s, had to use the National Guard to tell one of the governors in Arkansas, I think it was, that the integration of colors and whites, and that's the way it was worded at the time, as I recall, into the school system, the public school system, was going to happen whether the governor wanted it to or not. And they were brought down there to ensure the safety of those brave, brave students from the slings and arrows and much more substantial weaponry. Now, I know full well, a couple of years back, 2001, something like that, 99, Toronto's mayor got into a whole bunch of name-calling because he called out the equivalent in Toronto when there was, I think it was 2 meters of snow fell in one weekend or whatever the hell that one was. And he got shit for it when they were like the biggest thing that was necessary to clear Toronto of 2 meters of snow that fell in 48 hours. It was more like...
Yeah, it was roughly about 6 feet, yeah.
But, dude, I had 6 feet up in New York. The freaking plows cleared it out in a day and a half.
Yeah.
That's New York.
Yes, but in Toronto, we're talking about... Toronto is basically the equivalent of New York City. Smaller skyscrapers, but it is still a tight, tight urban area.
It's
exceedingly difficult to move stuff around in there. I mean, think about when they were trying to move the snow out of Manhattan and trying to get it into the East River and such. So what I'm wanting to find out from you, Del, as far as to the best of your recollection, the equivalent to the reserved forces or the National Guard or whatever it is that, that works on your side of the border. And please forgive my ignorance.
No, that's fine.
Do you? What is it that's analogous for you? And to the best of your knowledge, has it been deployed outside of the national border?
We do have several military bases in different provinces across the country, and they all have their own names. Like one base of Petawawa has been in the news quite a bit because a lot of people go from there. My own hometown, we had a place called the 21st Field Engineers, specializing. They were support specialists, bridge building, that kind of stuff. I know
the Army Engineer Corps that we have down here.
Yeah, very, very similar, although much smaller scale, because I actually knew and drank with a lot of those guys back in the day.
Could you imagine that, drinking with a whole bunch of Canadians? Who would have guessed?
What can I say? actually, my brother was part of that. My brother was part of that corps for a couple of years too. Not necessarily. We have like National Guards for each province, but we do have military bases where, should some kind of disaster strike in that province, I refer more, not so much to Toronto, because that's a whole story unto itself.
Yes, that's true.
But the province of Quebec, they are infamous for getting the butt end of a lot of weather. And we're not talking just snow. We're talking freezing rain on a scale that I don't think anybody on this broadcast has ever seen.
Well,
No, Joe, I will say this. I am talking I'm talking thousands of people without power and seeing footage of basically a power line getting hit and then being so weighted down with ice. Like, we're talking 6 foot icicles off this thing. The whole system collapses. In that respect, that is when the reserves are called out to restore power, clear roadways, and make sure everything is back up and running. But, like, priority is to get the power and the heat back on so that people aren't freezing themselves. It's not there for necessarily, like, law enforcement. To answer your question, a type of National Guard, not necessarily. However, when the Fed says march, they go. Like, we've had people from Alberta, British Columbia, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, all three of them, and points east, all heading overseas to places like Afghanistan, Iraq. And actually, many years before that, a lot of Canadians also signed in for the UN peacekeeping force back when it was a thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the blue helmets in the former Yugoslavia during that wonderful period, a lot of them were Canadians. And that was back when, if you saw the blue helmets coming, you listened to them. These days, not so much.
Yeah, Tech, look like you said. Tech, did you have something that you were looking to chime in on too?
No. I was just humming the Smurfs too.
Fair enough.
Okay. Those were white hats, Tech.
Yeah. We are getting a little bit late into the show, and I want to make sure that we do touch on a topic that we have thus far neglected to touch on, and that is the criminal arguments that have taken place toward this. And we would be remiss not to mention them, and do not get me wrong, I am in no way saying that any of this was right. And believe me, the Columbine, West Virginia, Virginia Tech,
Aurora, Colorado.
Yeah, these are all terrible. These are all heinous. But it brings me to two things. One, the arguments of, you know, what guns should be sold and how you can buy them. And two, how and where you can carry them. The guns that were used in those acts were secured either through poor management of a person, of an individual's personal firearms, or they were obtained illegally. Trying to say that you can't buy certain types of guns, or, you know, make a law that says you can't buy any guns at all, saying that any law-abiding citizen has no right to a gun, it does not disarm the criminal. Criminals do not obey the laws against rape, murder, and theft. Why would they obey a law against guns? They are getting them illegally already. Just
yeah,
saying.
I mean, I agree, Joe. I agree with you 100% on this. If banning guns from school premises worked 100%, what? The politicians who send their kids to school wouldn't send them with armed guards who are carrying micro machine guns under their arm.
That was the second point that I was going to make, the where and how you can carry them. All of these crimes, these horrible, horrible crimes, occurred in what we call gun-free zones. You do not see a mass murder at a gun rally where there are hundreds of people and thousands of guns. Why? Because you wouldn't even draw the damn gun before they get you.
Yeah, and this is something that's a real pain in the ass to really deconstruct, because I think that, unfortunately, this is something that will take far and away more time than what we're going to have, or possibly even several. Sure.
I can actually bypass the deconstruction aspect of it. It's real simple. Bad people will do bad things. I am not a bad person. But if I was, the knowledge that I have could do terrible, terrible things. I've owned and read complete copies of the Anarchist Cookbook, several different variations and different years and whatnot. And I read them from front to back. I could do some really terrible stuff with run-of-the-mill stuff you get in your grocery store if I was a bad person. I wouldn't need an AR-15. That would be child's play compared to some of the stuff that are in that you can do with laundry detergent, okay? Dishwashing liquids. Things that you can get without a background check, without a driver's license. All you need is cash. Walk into a grocery store. People don't realize what you can make that can go boom or can kill very quietly and be much more efficient and cost-effective than a bullet.
Now, before you go on with this one, Joe, this is going to make a lot of people smile and smirk and think that I don't know what in the hell I'm talking about, but this is the MacGyver principle. With enough know-how and time, you can actually do a lot more than what people think can be done. You don't have to go too much further than Oklahoma City to find out, unfortunately. And I don't like bringing that one up because that was done by somebody who was a native of my area over here now, Niagara Falls. But we would be completely remiss if we did not acknowledge the bad with the good. Joe?
Now, on what Tech said, this is a tool. This, sitting on my desk right now, is not going to kill somebody.
Well, actually, I was going to say, you know, it's a gun, but you want to call yourself a tool, that's your business.
It's a tool. It is used for a purpose.
Yes, you are.
Now, there's no
Hold on. I will pistol whip you, I swear. But what was that, Tech?
I was going to say, however, unlike many tools, not all tools, there are plenty of tools that are designed with the same intent. That specific tool
This is specifically to kill. Yes, this is the difference between this and a hammer. Can you use
many swords?
Yeah. Can you use a hammer or a knife other than slicing bread or hammering a nail to kill somebody? Yes. But absolutely. That's the thing. That's the difference between this and them, is that this is specifically designed to kill. I liken it to very much a fire extinguisher. Can you do harm to someone with a fire extinguisher? Oh, very yes. But the ultimate idea behind having a police officer with a firearm, or, you know, your neighbor who is a law-abiding citizen who owns his firearm, is to put out a fire, liken it to a fire extinguisher. You're putting out that fire before it can do damage or harm someone. This is meant, in my hands right now, this is meant to prevent someone else from doing damage or harming someone. Do I have the right to go point this at my neighbor's face for no given reason? No. The idea for this is so that if necessary, somebody is mugging me, I pull this out and pointing at their head, and hopefully that's enough to dissuade them. It worked one time, I know for sure. If that's enough to dissuade them, that's enough for me. I don't have to pull this trigger. If I have to pull this trigger, it should be only and only to stop someone else from doing harm to myself or someone else.
Imminent bodily harm. That is a really, really important piece. Mm-hmm. Dallin, or Tech, either one of you guys have something that you want to add on to this one in particular specifically right now?
I've been watching the QA here, the Q&A quite a bit, and Chris Vampoz did bring up another interesting statement about concerning the shootings that we've had to watch on the news and the fallout from it. He says, also, what was never talked about were the pharmaceuticals these people were on. And I think that also says a lot. There are a lot of breakdowns that, like Joey said, like it's hard to put together, but you're right.
Well, actually, can I
go right ahead, because I'm tongue tied here.
I'm going to expand into the realm of depression because I have an intimacy with it.
Come in a little bit closer again.
Okay, I'm going to expand on the depression aspect of some of these medications. If you read very carefully, many medications that are designed to combat depression will admit that they can make depression worse and increase the likelihood or the occurrence of suicidal thoughts. Yes. You make it worse.
Now, that is another thing that I meant to bring up was, you know, people reference all these numbers of the growing number of gun-related injuries seen in the hospitals. What they don't reference is the fact that half of those injuries, 50% of those injuries, are from suicide attempts.
Or even accidents.
Yeah, or accidents. And, you know, each one is tragic.
It while they were cleaning, or they dropped it and it shot themselves in the foot.
Well, the thing that they more often reference are things like, you know, a child finds an unsecured weapon that is loaded and shoots himself or another family member. And do not get me wrong. That's a terrible thing. It is tragic, and my heart goes out to that family. I'm not going to say that is just a small number in the grand scheme of things. What I am going to say is that falls to a failing of whoever owned that firearm to responsibly store it. Now, with the medications and the mental instability of some of these individuals, though, now, aside from the children that committed some of these crimes, they wouldn't have been able to get these guns legally anyway. Those again comes back to either, you know, somebody they knew had firearms and was irresponsible with them, or, you know, somebody sold them to these children illegally. To the individuals who were able to legally buy a firearm, or pseudo legally be able to buy firearms, the firearms that they got to use in these scenarios, they did not obtain legally because they knew that they would fail a background check.
Yeah.
Stolen from their parents.
Yes. And we have
stolen from their parents.
But again, that goes to breakdown of proper care and storage.
Well, here's the thing. Here's where I'd like to actually see something happen. I'd like to see legislation put into play and let the lawyers work it out, let the people vote on it and all that fun stuff. Let democracy and let do its job. But I would like to see something along the lines of, listen, if you have owned a gun and you've registered it, it is your job to secure it. That means if your gun gets stolen and you fail to report the theft. And more than 24 hours later, it's used to commit a crime. Unless you were out of town, something needs to happen. It needs to come back. There needs to be prosecution against the gun owner.
That's actually...
When your house is broken into, it's obvious you can't report it within 24 hours. But if you are the gun homer, you get home, and all of a sudden your gun safe's open, you notice the gun's missing. The first damn thing you should be doing is calling a special, either a police hotline of some sort or AFFL or whatever, and going, hey, listen, I just found out my gun safe's been broken into. I'm missing the firearm. Here's my name and identifier. I know what I have listed. The one I'm missing is this serial number here, or go down the list and I'll verify which one's missing by the one still here. And boom, guess what? Okay, so now the police know that that gun was stolen from your property and a relative time frame on which it was stolen.
Now, that's another thing is that, yes, that is something that I agree with, and that is actually on the law books for most states. For example, where I've bought firearms, and, all the licenses that I had gotten, they had specific questions pertaining to that particular scenario. If a firearm is stolen, or if I sell a firearm to somebody else, it is my responsibility, if that firearm is registered, to report that to the registration or to the law, to the authorities, if that firearm is stolen. Now, on the regard of registration, I will only say this much. I don't, partially I agree with it, partially I don't. Reason being, you look at Germany, 1930s. When the National Socialist Party came to power, one of the first things they did was look at all the registered gun owners, and if they weren't supporters of the party, they seized the firearms. That is why I'm partially not okay with registration.
Hmm.
Given the nature of what I had discussed earlier.
Yeah, so...
Without registration, the other setups don't work.
That's again why I'm divided on that matter.
Yeah, the real question becomes, not is registration right or wrong, but where's the balance? And I think that's what everybody's frustrated with, is that they want the anonymity. They want the ability to say, hey, listen, my government went batshit crazy. I need to defend myself, and I need the government to not be able to track me. But at the same time, we need to keep the batshit crazy people from doing bad things. Well, how do we do that without the registration to begin with? So it puts everybody on edge. They're doing a constant balancing act. Yeah. And after a while, I don't know about you guys, but I took acrobatics. Your calf muscles get real tired after a while standing on that beam for too long.
Okay. Dell?
Wow. A lot of things were said here. I can kind of see Joe's point of view with the registry in that suddenly all Democrats in a red state can no longer own firearms. I can see that happening. Just based on a lot of the batshittery that I see in the news and stuff, it is a slippery slope.
Like, should be able to own firearms.
Well, yeah, but no, like a lot of people use the term slippery slope, and it is because if you try to do one thing, something else pops up, or a big what if pops up, and unfortunately, it's always the what ifs that seem to stall the process.
Like especially when you could be tipping Godwin's law.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and by the way, for those that don't understand it really quickly, Godwin's law, in a nutshell, is once you pull out a reference to the Nazis, the argument is over because it's all gone into absurdities, which in this particular situation is not, because there is actual historical precedent where it's being used as an example of what can happen, not that is exactly what is going to happen.
And to note, the Nazis aren't the only ones that have done it. They're just, the most well-known, the most well-publicized, because they had really good propaganda.
Yes.
Yeah, they definitely put themselves on the map, historically speaking.
So the Romans.
Yeah. When I first, years ago, I watched, what was it called? Bowling for Columbine. Mm. Now, say what you will about Michael Moore, that is a whole thing unto itself. But he did bring to light, Tech knows what I'm talking about, but he did bring to light a lot of things about sort of the gun culture, at least what I've seen. Like, open up a new bank account, get a free gun. Things like that. I do think that the key to fixing a lot of what I see down in the States is better education, instilling that sense of respect of a firearm, and not just that it's your right to have one, therefore you have to have one. It's like, no, it's your right to have one, but here's the responsibilities you have upon possessing a firearm. Having like responsible gun ownership, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here with a lot of people, and when I say that, I think a lot of people want that.
The problem is that we have too many irresponsible people.
Yes.
Yeah, like my ex.
Yeah. There was one other thing about this that I was going to talk about. What the hell was it?
Don't laugh. Apparently, one of the cats in the house was peeing on stuff. She got fed up with it. She took it outside. My son's playing outside. And about 20 feet away from him, while he was watched her, she shot the cat dead. Yeah. No, I when he says irresponsibility, I'm serious on that one too. There are plenty of people who are not responsible owners.
Yeah, and again, Chris Sampson brings up a big one here. How do you balance the right to bear arms against the death toll, given that the USA is 13th in the world for gun-related deaths at 10 per 100,000 population? The UK has some of the toughest gun legislation. Has an equivalent death rate 40 times lower. I could almost say that a lot of that goes to what I said, gun culture. I think there's a lot of difference in mentality between what's going on in the UK and what's going on over here. You know, over here, you turn on the TV, like Joe said, you watch a movie, turn on the TV, and I mean, these guys are they're shooting more ammunition in like 2 hours. Then was shot during the entirety of Desert Storm in some cases.
Yeah, and by the way, forgive me for cutting you off on this one. At the risk of pissing off Chris on this one, right now, and again, please forgive me for wording it this way. Right now, what you're waging, what you're posing, is a wonderful argument, and it is a wonderful item that we will have to tackle a different time, because for this piece right now, this is an irrelevancy. And I don't say that to piss you off. I'm really not. I'm saying it that way because where we're dealing with right now isn't that piece. And I do want to talk about that one at another time. But for right now, please hold on to that one. Because that is definitely something that we want to end up talking about, because we knew full well going into this. 90 minutes was going to be pushing it really hard for a lot of pieces that we wanted to hit. And I know we're not done with this topic. Yeah. But that one in particular, hold on to it, because I do want to make sure that we hit that sometime. Back for you, Dallin.
Yeah, but that one I will say, though, is, okay, like I said, education, instilling that sense of respect of a firearm, that is a responsibility of, I think, everybody in all sectors of industry, including entertainment, I'm afraid. But also, and pardon the pun, this is going to be a call to arms to institutions like the FBI. It's been said, and it's most likely been proven, that a lot of these very grievous shootings and other incidents that have been happening have been the result of, in some cases, firearms acquired illegally, which means there's an illegal arms market going on in your country, which means there's something big going on that your institution has a responsibility of stopping. So how about get off your ass and work on it instead of pandering to all the bullshit? You want guns sort of off the street? There's a black market. Go get it.
There's something I would like.
Yeah, and by the way, because we're starting to get late onto it, I think at this point we're going to make one trip around with everybody to close this out. So make your points and your close on this one.
I would very strongly, as a gun owner, I would strongly support the idea of a license just to own a firearm. In contrast to the fact that, you know, the Constitution states it is a right of the people, you know, everybody, to have a firearm. Now, you know, I would liken it to a driver's license. If you're irresponsible with when you're driving, they pull your driver's license and you can't drive anymore. But here's the thing is that, you know, driver's license is not guaranteed, and you know, being able to drive isn't constitutionally guaranteed. Here's what is freedom, your freedom, period. I mean, your physical freedom. If you're irresponsible, we, you know, the government and, you know, the people have the right to decide to put your ass in prison, therefore by stripping you of that freedom.
Yes.
Now, the last thing that I'm going to put forth on this is simple. It's a quote from one of the gentlemen who wrote that damn thing, and I'm going to go ahead and share it with you right now. I'm hoping that it shows up all right.
We'll have to wait and see this time.
Does it show?
It's flickering, unfortunately, again.
Darn it. Hold on a second. Let me do this another way. Save image. There we go. This other way actually worked. Let me go ahead and bring it back up. Sorry, I didn't mean for that to take so long. Here we go. Is it showing up now?
There we go.
There it is.
Okay.
There it is. I can't read it, though.
In what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. From Thomas Jefferson.
Okay. At least somebody got to read it.
Also said, "Don't believe everything you read on the internet."
That was Abraham Lincoln.
Sorry.
But yes, that pretty much sums up my point. Remember that, and this is another thing that he had said: any government big enough to give you everything you want is strong enough to take everything you have.
Fair enough. Tech. Oh, last item's on for you.
I have 2 points to make. One, having taken statistics and several other forms of math, I can easily make the numbers say whatever I want about guns. Plain and simple. It applies to politics, everything. Know where your facts are coming from before you cite the numbers for them. Because somebody said that a survey says that X produces Z and A produces B, and sure, when you sample group D and E only, when you sample the rest, it's all fake. So know where data is coming from. You'll be happier with the end results if you know where your information is coming from.
4 out of 5 doctors agree.
About what?
No, that.
Yeah. Anyway, especially when squirrels are involved. Anyway, the second point I'm going to make is I am a responsible gun owner because, one, I don't own a gun. Not owning the gun isn't the responsible part. The not owning the gun is responsible because I realize that I do not know, A, how to properly care for it, B, properly handle it, C, use it, and D, been trained to recognize when it's appropriate to use it. Because of these 4 reasons, I do not own a gun. On the other hand, I am really capable with knives. I know when to use them, when not to use them, which kinds of blades and materials are good for what uses. You should definitely see my kitchen cutlery sometime. Oh boy, I love my carbon steel blades. But the point is that I'm also a responsible knife owner. They are not anywhere within reach where my son can get them.
Good man.
And that's a knife. There's no bullets involved.
It's a good thing. Unless you're an anime, in which case all bets are off. Dallin, last poise for you?
I guess in a somewhat cynical way, the fact that institutions like the National Rifle Association have really tried to minimize the idea of the militia part and the overthrowing of the government part, I think that could almost be seen almost as a blessing these days, because if the American public, gun enthusiastic as they are, were to really recognize what the Second Amendment was for, I think we'd have had a couple of marches on D.C. right now by these people to overthrow the governments if they really understood what their responsibility really was. I stand by what I said before. The key to being able to, like, yes, bearing arms in the United States, it is right. It's written in your guys' constitution. I understand that. What I really wish could have been somehow written or encouraged or enforced was the mantle of responsibility that is placed on a person who picks up that arm, or picks up that firearm and realizes what now is expected of them. Like, again, I go, education, responsibility, respect for the firearm. Those three have to be key. And I think if you were to get those three put in place, you most likely would not see repeats of these disasters, these mass shootings, these insane barbaric acts on the part of people. But the government cannot do it alone. It has to start with the people. It has to start at home. People have to make the conscious choice that, do I want to go and buy a machine gun? Okay. Now that I have it, what am I, like, do I respect this? Am I G.I. Joe or am I a responsible gun owner? And unless you can answer the latter, you've still got a ways to go.
I was cavalry, you dick.
Well, hey, you know, if you're going to go out and buy a machine gun, you might as well get one you can use almost anywhere, like Nerf.
That's a good point.
Dude, have you seen some of the Nerf stuff they've come out with?
I work with a bunch of geeks. No, I work with a bunch of geeks. I've seen some Nerf that would, yeah.
Airsoft, gotta love it.
I have an airsoft pistol right up here. I love the thing, it's spring loaded.
Now, before we go ahead and pull this whole thing closed, I want to make sure that I reiterate to everybody who has made it to this point of the show, thank you. And I don't say that lightly. Thank you for being through all the way through. And I've said it the same way many a time. This is not a sexy show. It's not as funny as a lot of others, but we try to really come at this, even though we are not necessarily really, really well-versed in a lot of these topics, we try to take what we've learned through our lifetime and our experience and try to put it to something worthwhile. So for those of you that have taken the time to, you know, really try to think these through with us, thank you. Especially those of you that have been chiming on the Q&A. We knew going into this was a hot issue, no matter what. And we've taken the time to really set aside animosity for any particular position in order to really find out what makes it all tick. And we as a group, collectively, sincerely hope, that those of you that have been watching and paying attention and thinking through it are also willing to go ahead and say, that's a point I didn't think about before. I don't agree with it, but I'm going to think about it. That being having said, what the law says at this point and what it means has been debated in the halls of these United States of America for 200 plus years, since the absolute inception of the ink that was put to paper. We're not going to go ahead and solve the question of what it all means. We are going to have, of course, our own personal opinions on what it should mean and what the responsibilities are, not just in the actual possession or use, but the responsibility of the law itself to our society as a whole. There are a lot of arguments to be said for getting rid of or keeping weapons, but that's neither here nor there for this particular episode. There are a lot of things that could be said for why are people allowed to have these guns when they are obviously hurting or chemically imbalanced. And again, that is an irrelevance at this moment for this episode. Why is that law there? And that is really the biggest part of it all. The origination of it all is steeped in the beginnings and the foundations of this country for trying to find a way through an incredibly dark time in history where one government was completely repressing a secondary. The colonies were put under thumb, and King George III did not do squat about it at the time. In historical context, that's where it's born out of. An absolute frustration of, if government is going to go ahead and put its thumb onto the smaller guy needs to be able to retaliate with all due haste, with all due power. And the problem becomes in how to make that happen. That's where the problem comes in. That's where 200 years plus of wrangling have really come to it all. And it's not something that we're going to solve in one night. Shit. It took 200 plus years for us to get to even this point of discussing it reasonably, reliably, quietly, calmly.
We can only hope. Oh, peace.
And yeah. It would be wonderful to have it. But we don't know what it's going to take to finally come to a resolution to it all. So I will leave with this. If you are a weapon owner, not a gun, a weapon owner, it is your responsibility, it is incumbent upon you to safeguard whatever that weapon is in whatever method is necessary to make sure that someone who should not have access to it does not have access to it. And if they do gain access to it, that they are at the very least unable to use it easily. It could be a sword. It could be poison for rats. It could be a knife. It could be a firearm. It could be nunchucks. It could be virtually anything. But if it's yours, you hold the responsibility for what gets done with it because it is yours. You can't rely on somebody to be trained the same way that my daughter was for the absolute first rule, which is if it ain't yours, you'll leave it alone. You can't trust in people to follow that rule because it's not their responsibility all the time. And they wouldn't have been brought up with that. It's yours. Keep it safe. Keep it in the best possible condition. And should the time come when you need to utilize that weapon for its intended purpose, you use it in the most responsible way possible, with the least amount of hurt possible. and necessary. I was lucky. In the 30-plus years that my dad was a beat cop, he only ever drew his weapon twice. Never fired it, except on a range, to qualify for his badge. I was lucky. My dad always came back from work. Not all of them in the military or paramilitary are that lucky. Thank you for your time. We do truly appreciate your time and your thoughts and your insights and your questions, because you never know where the next good question and thought is going to be coming from. So thank you. Dallin, thank you very much for your insight and your thoughts, especially considering as an outside to this all.
I hope I put a pair of fresh eyes on this whole thing, and glad to be here as always.
Tech, thank you very much, of course, for your time.
Of course. It was definitely a pleasure to be here, and not new. Call me. Guys, gotta call me.
Joe, thank you for your insights and, of course, for your service.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. And the one thing that I would like to add to all of this is that this is not necessarily responsible. The only reason why these are out is for the subject at hand. Once this is done, these are going back in their lockbox and a discussion.
In other words, you set them up as props.
Pretty much.
Even though they're live and real, authentic, they're still being used as a prop to set up.
You know.
Yeah, yep. The ammunition is somewhere else.
Exactly. And I'm going to leave you all with two items. Item number one, please note that at no time tonight did we ever say in anger to any one of each other, who the hell's the Amish Wolverine again? Item number two. If you do have a firearm, please remember the three top rules as taught to me by my grandfather, who was in the Navy in World War II. Your weapon is always loaded. Rule number two, when you know that your weapon is unloaded, your weapon is loaded. And rule number three, you never point your weapon at anything you are not ready to destroy, because it is loaded. I learned a lot from
him. Number four. You forgot number four.
Which is?
Number four is, don't forget, when somebody is pointing a weapon at you, it's loaded.
Thank you for joining us. It's a contentious issue, and it's not one that we have come even close to really unraveling properly. Are we going to talk about the fallout of the quote-unquote gun culture for America? Absolutely. And like I said earlier, I want to have that discussion because there is so much that goes into it. But that will be for another night. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for your insights. If you would like to drop messages for us for topic ideas and such, please, by all means, feel free to send it over to me, shootintribble@gmail.com, and we'll see what we can do with that. If you'd like to make any kind of comments, if you'd like to send in a voicemail or a text message, feel free to do that on the voice line, 959-HCTV-554, and we can see what we can do with all that. The next show is scheduled for August 24th, a week from now. It will be a day after my daughter's 20th birthday on the 23rd. She turns 12. And I don't know that we'll have her on next week, because next week is our Power of 10 show. It will be a not safe for work event. I am working on getting Heath and Wright from the Scathing Atheist to join us, because this kind of thing is right up his alley. If you have a Twitter account, if you have a Facebook account, if you have an email account, if you have smoke signals that you can light under his ass, send Heath messages and say, get on the show next week. Please?
I'm trying.
We need to get Cash on here, too, because I think he'd like to be able to unload as well.
Yeah, we can certainly see about that. But
well, if Cash comes on, I'm going to have to get a package of Vivarin.
We'll make sure that you're ready for that. In any event.
And Mountain Dew, call me. That's the way I can stay awake.
Unrenowned Tech, the sleeping atheist.
As always, thank you very much for your time.
I couldn't help it. My son ran me ragged.
We will see you, of course, on the next show, when maybe I'll actually have proper enunciation and elocution. But until the very next time, thank you. And keep asking the questions. We really, really do like them, appreciate them, and it helps. And of course, as always, my good nights for all of you, and my good nights for my lady, because 9 years on, I am still in love. Matane Fuchin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. And for all of you out there, as always, on behalf of the panel, I wish the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. Until the very next time we get together, everyone. Good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.